Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. You're Eric. It's debate time. Score. How do you say a score in a baseball game? How do you say it? You got really mad at me over the weekend.
I thought you were going to introduce me as Steven Eric to use the same way that you say a score.
So do you always do the team
leading team, trailing team? That's it.
No, it's so... I agree with that if you say, and the Dodgers won, but in this case, I literally had to tell you the score, in which I borrowed a soccer usage in that the home team is on the right or on the bottom, which is what they do in broadcasts, Eric. And I sent you the clip. I literally was just reading the score from the MLB app, which was 2-9 in this case.
From that perspective on the MLB TV app, from a visual standpoint,
very informative,
especially when they do the boxes where it's like that game and then it's team on one side, team on the other. So it's like literally connecting the score to that team.
It also tells you who's at home.
That's a
very informative way to do it.
But from a like practical perspective, I was so startled when you said, I believe it was
2-9
as you called it, or whatever it was. I like stared at my phone and I was like, do I throw my phone away? Like, I wanted to like chuck it at a wall. And I was like, wait, what? Like, and then, was this Wednesday or no, Thursday night? I mean,
oh, I'm going to make fun of you for this. Don't worry.
No, I mean, I'm just trying to remember the time.
It was the Mookie Betts game.
Okay. So there,
game that went to 2-9.
I was in a bad, it finished 2-11. I was in a bad mood that night because my cable and internet went out during the top of the third. So it was still like a reasonable game at that point. And then they just kept hitting home runs. I missed Austin Barnes' home run, for God's sake. And so I was listening only and following using data on my phone. I was in that was my headspace when I saw your bastardization of the score, and then that informed my decision, I think.
Well, whether 2-9, 9-2, the Dodgers broke out of their slump in a big way, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about who might still be struggling but turning things around. We've got a Dodgers rewind, we've got questions for Craig, all of that after this.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and we love our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I wanted to lead the podcast with asking you what you thought about seeing the epic Mookie Betts 3-home run game.
I saw the home run I saw was amazing. Yeah. the home run I saw. Woo. All right. Yay. It was fun. We've talked about it. Like, he's, even if he's not like hitting home runs all the time, like, he's been like a joy to watch. Like, you know, the occasional home run, great, but then like does just about everything else well. But he hit the 3 home runs. I guess I didn't realize this because it became a thing that night. He has 6 3-homer games. Like, what the hell? Like, that's crazy. So Johnny Mize, Sammy Sosa both also have 6. That's the MLB record. It's 3 or more. Betts doesn't have a 4-home run game. But, like, that's amazing. And so, like, you know, you can't – this is – I don't know if it's something you project, like, because – Betts is only 27. Like, when Mize hit his 6th 3-home run game, he was 37. Sosa was 33. So it's not like you go, well, Betts is going to have like 15 3-home run games. It's going to be amazing. But like, I don't know if you could do that. But like, still, it's pretty like, it's pretty amazing. But speaking about like the other stuff, like that was Thursday, the Dodgers' 2nd straight win. Then they won again Friday, and then Saturday he had a 2-run single early. Again, other stuff, but then he also homered, hit the tying home run in the 7th, and that was the first time he and Mike Trout homered in the same game. Speaking of 3 home run games, one of Mookie Betts' 3 home run games was in Anaheim a few years ago. Betts has now 11 home runs against the Angels in games that Trout played, and then Trout has 10 home runs in games against Betts, but that last night was the first time they ever homered in the same game, so I thought that was kind of fun. But also, Mookie Betts off the field, today, we're recording on Sunday, he partnered with a nonprofit organization called Pull Up Neighbor. So they went to Compton. They're basically providing like all sorts of stuff: food, face masks, hand sanitizer, a voter registration program, and health screenings for like people who might not be able to afford such things. Betts' quote the other day: "People who are more fortunate have access to those things. I want to go to areas that are less fortunate and need it." And then he talked about he did a charity in his like hometown of Nashville, or not, I don't know if it's exactly Nashville, but in that area. But he said the other day, like, as part of the interview, he's like, L.A. is my home now. And then, like, when he said it, it like, resonated. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right. He signed a 12-year contract that hasn't even started yet. And it's like, man, so, like, that was pretty cool. But it was, like, just sort of part of the theme for this week.
So we have the newest Dodger kicking butt. We have I don't want to say oldest, most tenured Dodger also kicking butt.
Yeah, so Clayton Kershaw, we talked about last week, is like the tale of two Kershaws. Was his first 2 starts, he was back to like close enough to vintage. Like, he looked really awesome against the Angels. He only gave up 1 hit in 7 innings. It was an Anthony Rendon homer, and Rendon also walked twice. The rest of the Angels were 0-for-20 against him. So like that was fun. But then also Saturday, he and his wife, they did like a back to the Kershaw's Challenge. That's his charity. They did a back to school event where people drove through at Dodger Stadium and got a bunch of like backpacks, school supplies, food, face masks, sunscreen, physical education kits for home. Again, just like helping out. But also, I saw this was pretty cool. Let's see. Kershaw and his wife were on Zoom, and as people were driving in, like, the Dodgers had like a big monitor set up, and like they would talk to the people like as they drove in. So you couldn't really meet in person doing things like that now, but that I thought that was kind of a cool thing. So yeah, it's like on and off the field, pretty cool, from like, you know, probably the 2 most statured Dodgers at this point.
not too far behind, although a lot more time in the bigs left to go. But another MVP after the two previous MVPs that we've brought up already, Cody Bellinger, looking a bit more like himself.
Yeah, so, you know, he's been, we've talked about this, he was slumping a lot early on. They gave him an off day, like, when they were in Arizona, it was August 1st, and then he homered in his next two games back, but then he was 6 for 35 in his next nine games, so no extra base hits. And then, you know, it's weird because, like, we'll talk about this in a second, but, like, there were, you know, a lot of people are slumping, like, just generally on the team, but the team's also, like, doing well at the same time. So it's weird that a lot of the questions are like, hey, what's wrong with Cody Bellinger, you know? But then in a normal year, you could just be like, oh, it's, you know, they're 20 games into a season. Like, that's
unfortunately
really,
here, yeah. We're a third
now,
of the way.
Right. Now it's like, oh, the season's a third over. Like, it's kind of like the trade deadline's in 2 weeks. That's crazy. And then they, and it's later than usual, date-wise. But so Friday in Anaheim, Cody Bellinger hit two home runs. He had two singles and stole a base and scored twice on Saturday, so looking better. The funny part was Oral Hershiser on Friday during the Sportsnet LA broadcast, he was talking and while Bellinger was batting, and he was just talking about how he's been like looking better recently. And I just sort of excerpt part of the quote. He said, some of the foul balls and the hard hit balls, it's starting to change. And like literally within 2 seconds, he crushed a home run. And it was like, it was one of those perfect like analyst moments on a broadcast where they just set something up perfectly and it happens. Like, you kind of love to see that. In a weird way, like, I don't remember Dave Roberts addressing this, but like, Bellinger played, he's in the last five games, he's only played center field once. He's actually starting again today, so two out of six. But like, he played first base three times and DH once. Oral Hershiser mentioned it on a broadcast, like, his sort of theory was he didn't, like, when Bellinger was slumping, it allowed him to, like, if he's not just sitting there in the outfield, like he's bored or something, like he's thinking too much about his at-bats. I guess that makes some sort of sense. I don't know. But, like, but I haven't really heard an explanation why that happened. But also part of it was, like, A.J. Pollock's actually looked good defensively, so, like, they don't mind putting him out in center field, which they've done. So I think that's probably part of it, but yeah, it's just weird. But like, yeah, this whole like season has been sort of weird. So we talked about like the Bellinger slump. Max Muncy was also slumping. So this week, the Dodgers had a 4-game series with the Padres. They lost the first two, and at this point, right, they lost the first two and they slumped to 11-7, right? That's a 99 win pace over a full season. And a lot of the like questions over the previous 2 days, like, what's wrong with the offense, man? I think at this point too, the Dodgers were like fifth in runs per game, even after the two games they lost.
It was interesting, like, yeah, at the end of the slump, one, record wise, they were, you know, you would like the Dodgers to have a gazillion game lead in the NL West, given the competition, even with the Padres and Rockies performing really well. They didn't, so that felt a little crummy. But record-wise, they were looking good. The bullpen looked great, and it just the offense just was so timely lackluster, right? Just a bunch of slumps from a bunch of key guys, and then also not driving runners in scoring position. Just this kind of icky feeling slump.
Yeah, well, like it was weird too because like they were generally good with runners in scoring position relative to the rest, but also like batting average is way down, or at least was, especially like a week ago. It's normalized a little bit. But, like, this season's been super weird in that regard. But also, like, if you look at it this way, like, there's no fans at the games, right? So it's hard to, like, actually have a rally from an emotional standpoint, you know, if you're mm-hmm. watching the game. Like, it's for the team, they're less invested in it. I'm sure it affects them because you could feel it if you're at the stadium and the crowd's either going nuts one way or the other, either for you or against you. You'll feel that. But, like, when there's nobody in the stands and you're not hitting, like that's a dead atmosphere, man. Like that's weird. So like, but the funny part, so Dave Roberts, one of the more like positive people like I've ever met, I think I would
when
say.
When he first hired, I don't know if you remember this, I brought up, my only concern was, is Dave Roberts able to get angry? Which, you know, sometimes is a thing that's useful for managers. Because, and growing up, Dave Roberts was on the Dodgers, on the team that I kind of really got into baseball on. And his, like, Jumbotron photo was him with this just huge smile. Right. To the point where my brother and I was smiling Dave. That's who it was, smiling Dave.
So when this is pregame Wednesday, the Dodgers had lost the two straight. Oh, and another thing about, you talked about the Padres and Rockies. So at the end of play Tuesday, coming into Wednesday, Dodgers were tied with the Padres at 11-7, but the Padres had won 3 of 5 against the Dodgers at that point. So the Dodgers would have been the 7 seed in the West, because the way the seeding works, it's division winners are 1, 2, 3, second place teams are 4, 5, 6, and then the two best records are 7, 8 besides that. So for the first round, at that very moment, the Cubs had the best record in the NL. At that very moment, had the playoffs, we talk about, you could never say, like, if the season ended today, this year you could probably say that with a little more clarity, like, because you, at some point the season might just say, you know what, it's ending today. But, like, at that point, it was Dodgers 7 seed versus Rockies 2 seed with all three games potentially at Coors Field. And, like, that's, like, one of those, like, shutter down your spine moments. You're like, oh, like, how would you ever, like, plan for that? That's weird. But it just was sort of funny. Anyway, so going into the – we have daily Zoom calls. Every team does this, but the manager, pregame and postgame, and then usually, like, players mixed in. But so for Dave Roberts post pregame Wednesday, he, like, entered the room – it just seemed like in a short mood, like he was in an unpleasant mood, and you could tell with him, like, the way he was just sort of just sitting there, you know, and, like, he was being short with, like, every question. He didn't like a few questions, and he's just like, that's baseball, you know, like, just, like, very, like, like, in your, like, not being too much of a dick about it, but, like, just being enough. And then so it was, like, the third or fourth question, I don't remember, but Bill Plunkett of the Orange County Register, and, look, we all, like, relatively, like, know Dave. Like, it's been a few years we've been around him. They kind of know. And there's, like, a good back and forth, a lot of joking sometimes. And that's a lot easier to do when you're, like, in a scrum in the dugout and you're face-to-face. Maybe it doesn't translate over Zoom.
You sound a little salty today, Dave. I like salty Dave.
I like good questions, Bill.
Okay, well, I'll try and come up with
That'd
one.
That'd be great.
The cliche is, like, everyone wants, like, the manager to go and turn over the table in the clubhouse and just yell and ream people out. But, like, I don't know if that's what happened. But, like, there was, like, since then, Dodgers are 4-0. They've scored 6 runs every game, at least. And then they've outscored the Padres and Angels 30-11. So, look, I'm not putting it all on that, on what Plunkett called Salty Dave, but, like, I thought it was funny, and it was, like, it was just one of those things. But so the Dodgers, as we speak, are 15-7. They haven't played their Sunday game yet, but they're 15-7 with, like, not really, like, clicking on all cylinders there. So, like, Corey Seager's been great, but the three lefties behind him, Bellinger, Max Muncy, Jock Peterson are all hitting under 200 entering today with an OPS that begins with a 6. Muncy, another slumper, he got Friday off. Mm-hmm. And then he came back Saturday. He had a 2-run single. It was his first hit with runners in scoring position this year. It's just been a weird year. And then later, the Dodgers played another extra inning game Saturday night, and Muncy led off the 10th with a sacrifice fly. So you start with a runner on second in extra innings now. Chris Taylor was that runner last night in the 10th. He stole second during Muncy's at-bat.
Third.
And then – oh, it's third. Excuse me, yeah. And then Muncy hit one, almost hit it out. It was very close to hitting it out. He could have joined Edwin Rios in the leadoff 2-run home run club. But instead, he got the first leadoff sacrifice fly in Major League history. I thought that was cool. But aside from that, you know, right-handed batters, Kike, he has a 669 OPS. He played really good defense, but, like, four hits and a home run, drove in four on opening day. He's 11 for 55. That's 200 with one RBI since. Walker Buehler has not really been that good. Like, he's just been kind of uneven. He's recorded two outs in the sixth inning in his four starts total. But if you look at it one way, like, he didn't throw much during the downtime. So, like, his start of summer camp was like the normal start of a spring training. If you look at it in that lens, like, right now is basically at the point where spring training would be over, like a normal spring training would be over from that timeline. So, like, maybe he's not that far off. It's just, like, not everything's clicking quite well. Like, he went 4 2/3 last night, gave up five. It was, you know, it was a struggle. And so, like, that's the thing. That said, with all those struggles, second in the league in runs per game, second in runs allowed. This is in all of baseball. First in home runs. They have a 112 OPS plus, 113 wins WRC plus. They're first in Fangraphs WAR on offense. They're tied for first in ERA plus, 180 with the Indians. And then they're third in FIP FIP minus. I don't know if you say FIP minus to, like, when it's that part of it. I don't know what it is. Anyway, they've been really good. They're first by a mile in run differential. They've outscored their opponents by 55 runs. They're outscoring teams by 2.5 runs a game on average. So, like, the next best NL team is the Rockies at plus 19, to give you an idea. And then the Yankees and the Twins are next best in the AL at plus 33. So, like, they're still really good. Like, they've even weathered, like, these injuries. Like, Corey Seager, he missed five games. He was injured, as we talked last weekend about him. He ended up missing five games with lower back discomfort. Then he homered in his first at-bat back, although he's just 1 for 14 since returning. Will Smith, neck inflammation. He had a home plate collision 2 weeks ago against the Padres, and then he, like, was okay with it. He started five of the next eight, but it was still kind of lingering, and then he felt something like fielding a ball on Wednesday against the Padres, so then he left. They ended up putting him on the DL on Saturday, which meant they called up K-Bert Ruiz. God, I'm going to butcher that name. I apologize. I'm in my head about it. And, so they called him up Saturday. He's making his major league debut today. He's 22. He's catching Dustin May, who's also 22. He caught Dustin May 28 times from 2017 to 19 across four minor league levels. The Double A Tulsa won the Texas League Championship. May pitched and won the clincher, and Ruiz was behind the plate. So, my trivia question, Jacob, for you. Jacob Ruiz is
one way to get around pronouncing it, I guess.
That's right. K-Bert Ruiz is the sixth youngest Dodger starting catcher at 22 years and 27 years old today.
True. I win.
Dang it. I thought I would stump you with that one. No, we're going to do a true or false next time. how many of the five younger catchers can Jacob name?
I'm going to set my over-under to 1.5.
I like it.
We'll see. And we'll talk about how wrong I was after this.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Name the five youngest catchers in Dodgers history. So here's the problem. I can name young catchers that started with Dodgers, and I have a list of six or so. But I'm starting to realize that if they're under, like, if they started the career of the Dodgers under, you know, 24-ish, They're probably on the list. I bet one of these I just started older than I thought.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're on this list. So I have to just name, and I don't know, oh, he was really, really young. So I'm going to go through, I have, let me count. I have five and a half names.
Before you, oh, okay.
Oh, no, do I get a hint?
I was going to say, do you want a hint before you name anything?
Let's see if I get any right.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I'll do my three, I'll do three guesses, and then if I've whiffed a lot, we'll break out a hint. Russell Martin.
No.
Yeah, see, we're already there. Navarro.
Yes.
Okay.
He was 21 in 2005.
Yeah, and it was this weird thing where he was younger but started before Martin, and I knew that, and I just couldn't remember if Martin still got in kind of under the gun, so to speak.
So, like, Martin was a little older because played some college before he was drafted, so that usually hurts that kind of thing. But so Ruiz is the youngest Dodgers catcher since Deodato Navarro. He actually caught 40. He started 49 times at catcher before or up to including how old K-Bird is today.
So now we're going to enter the Jacob names famous Dodgers that start their career and pray they started young. Let's start with a couple of Hall of Famers. Roy Campanella.
Nope. Okay. He was Negro League catcher for a while, so like kind of got hurt on that regard.
Sure. Mike Piazza.
No. He was junior college when they drafted him in 88, didn't play till 92. So he was already like up there.
Yep. My last Jacob names famous catcher in praise. Paul LaDuca.
God, no. I don't know how old he was when he started. I thought you were going to go a different direction than this, and this is really your only other hope to get a second one.
Okay. Thanks, bud.
But
I love it when you're like, name five, you have two hopes.
I'll give you the hint. The hint was going to be that one of these is in the Jacob era, and that was Deodato Navarro. But there's only one other name who've played when you were alive.
We're not explicit yet, so I'm not going to make the podcast explicit, I'm very upset. Is this because I got the score wrong? Is that why?
No. I said Dick earlier. I thought we were explicit.
Oh, okay.
So you can tell me to fuck off.
That's not what I was going to do.
Oh, that's
I can invite you to lemonade. Who could I have gotten?
You don't have another guess.
No, I'm tapping out.
Okay, so the one I thought you might get when you went into the naming famous Dodger catchers mode was Mike Socia.
Sure. Okay.
And then so he started
like the one I didn't name. I finally gave up. I went, no, all these guys are starting way older than I thought. I give up.
Al Lopez in the 20s.
Oh, I was Al Lopez was on my list.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and again, I just hit this wall. I'm like, with Piazza and Luduga, I wasn't sure about Campy. I didn't know how long he was in the Negro Leagues. But I'm like, these guys started older, and I knew that, but I had nothing else to guess.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I had Al Lopez and Socia just reversed in my head, they started even older.
My favorite part about Al Lopez, so that was not a good Brooklyn team, and it was the very end of the season. He's only 20. And they bring him up for his major league debut, and it's a doubleheader, and he catches all 19 innings of both games. So, welcome to the big leagues, kid. He ended up starting 115 games by the time he's K-Bert's age. Otto Miller, if you've been following along with my 1920 Dodgers weekly reviews, and I mean, look, I know the audience was screaming at their podcast player of choice, Otto Miller, but like. Yeah, he was one as well. but the one is sort of the most obscure is the youngest Dodgers catcher, at least in the modern era. I couldn't find anyone in the 1800s. There's no like full game logs for like 1900 and older. So, like, it's harder to search. But, like, I went through just looking at, the, like, the team list. And I don't think there's anyone younger. But Gilberto Reyes in 1983, he caught 8 games before he turned 20. And he's the only one, I believe, under 20 to start at catcher for the Dodgers. But he was around for a few years. He played a little bit in 88 on the 88 team. He was not on the postseason roster, but... when Mike Socha, he tore his knee up during the series, they flew Gil Reyes to Oakland, and the plan was they were waiting on, like, word from Major League Baseball, I believe. The rules were a little different at the time in terms of replacing somebody. You had to get approval. And I believe had the series gone back to Los Angeles, the Dodgers would have been able to take Socha off and add Gil Reyes as their second catcher. They would have just played Dempsey the last 2 games anyway, but Reyes almost got on the World Series roster, but the Dodgers were selfish, and they won it in 5 in Oakland instead. So that's where we're at.
I'd like to have you know that Mike Piazza made his debut at 23. So give me some... You acted like I was way off there.
A late 23.
Whatever, I don't care. No. I'm looking the rest of these up to make myself feel better.
That honestly surprises me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Paul LeDuc is embarrassing. He's 26. Let's see.
Wait a minute. No, Piazza turned 24 by the time he made his debut.
I see. Age 23, and I'm rolling with it.
His age 23 season. I got you.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. I'm looking at Baseball Reference and going with it. Let me feel better about myself.
You know what? I'm going to just take... Okay. Wait a second. Oh, you know what? He was 23. He was 3 days shy of his 24th birthday. So yes. Jacob wins again.
That's good.
Speaking of Piazza, full circle. Keber Ruiz is wearing 25 today. Mm-hmm. Same number Mike Piazza wore in that first September call up in 1992. So no pressure, kid. Like,
Russell Martin, also 23. Campy, also 26.
Yeah. So, look, you did good.
You're about to do good with this Dodgers rewind, and I'm excited to hear it. Because we're back on players I've not heard of.
Nice. You know, it's always try to have a sort of a timely theme with this. And 3 homer games with the Dodgers, that was sort of the thing this week with Mookie Betts. So, the Dodgers have 28 different 3-homer games. That includes the 4-homer games by Gil Hodges and Sean Green. 24 different players. I was going to ask you which players have 2 3-homer games. I might still do that, actually. But
I'll forget you'd said that. I won't start looking it up.
That's fine. Anyway, but 21... 21 3-homer games since they moved to Los Angeles. The first one to do it as a Los Angeles Dodger was Don Demeter, who was an outfielder. They got him early, in the early 50s. His Sabre bio said he signed for an $800 bonus. I'm not sure. That seems like a decent amount for the time. Like, not like a world beater, but anyway... 1959, Dodgers were playing the Giants, April 21st. He homered off 3 different relievers in that game. The first homer was an inside-the-park homer. And from his Sabre bio, they noted 1 Los Angeles paper, and it wasn't the Times. Even had a contest to give him a nickname. The winning name? It was Speed Demeter. So, like, that was the... They voted on that, and that's what they came up with. And
good
so...
for them.
So he's the only Dodger in his 3-homer game to have an inside-the-park home run. His last of the 3 home runs in that game was a walk-off in the 11th. He's also the only Dodger in a 3-homer game to have a walk-off. So very unique 3-homer game for Demeter. He was mostly a center fielder throughout his career. He played 11 years in the majors, parts of 5 years with the Dodgers. He debuted in Brooklyn in 56, although he barely played. He did hit a homer in one of his 3 at-bats. And then he had like an 85 OPS plus with the Dodgers. He was like just okay. But he's also known for like the guy who essentially replaced Duke Snider in center, even though that's not totally accurate. He's the guy who played the most defensive innings in center field in 1959. And if you're looking at like a baseball reference page, he's listed as the center fielder in that group, which is fine. But like, it's not like he took over for Duke Snider. Right. But it ended like 10 straight years of Duke Snider being the man in center field. And Duke Snider was still on the team. He just moved to right. So like that was a big thing in terms of like symbolic. It's like on a very smaller scale, it's like when Juan Pierre had his like consecutive game streak, and it was when we were all railing for like for Matt Kemp and Andre Ethier to play more, but Joe Torre was like kept running Pierre out there. But like once he sat him once, it's like no more streak, and it became a lot easier to keep sitting him at that point. So I'm sure it was something like that with Duke Snider. But anyway, Demeter, he started 3 of the 6 games in the 59 World Series. He was 3 for 12. I thought it was weird. I couldn't figure out why, like, or how they did this, but he started the 3 home games, and there was no DH or anything. So I was trying to figure out if like there was gamesmanship or something like that, where like because like they didn't want to lose Snider as a DH. I don't know what, but that had nothing to do with it. So I can't figure out why he only started at home and didn't start in the 3 road games, but. I forgot to include a picture of this in our thing, but it'll be in the show notes. But his 1961 Topps card has 2 pieces of like cartoon art on the back, and the note just says he has played in 6 different World Series games, which is just the 6 games he played in. But like, there's also a picture. There's 6 different bats lined up, and he's like, God, I don't have it in front of me, but it was just like the weirdest. Like, yeah, you could just say he played in a World Series. Like, they made it sound like he played in a lot more World Series than he actually did. But anyway, it was weird. Demeter, after playing, he was a longtime pastor in Oklahoma City. Now, he's 85, still alive. He's actually pastor emeritus at Grace Baptist Church in Oklahoma City.
We go now, there now.
Yeah, you can go visit him. I don't know how often he does sermons, maybe not that often anymore, but he's still listed on the church's website. I checked it out. Back to 3 homer games for a second.
No.
Now, 4 Dodgers with a 3 homer game drove in exactly 3 runs in that game. Uh-huh. So all 3 were solos. How many can Jacob name?
Very few.
Yeah, you know, that's a bad... can you name one? Like, just... I'll happily give hints.
So we're talking about this, and you mentioned that you might give it before, and I can only think of literally one game, and I that clearly means I'm blanking on many more that I'm just my brain has locked this
but
out.
But if I know you, you're thinking of the game.
the game I am thinking of is Hsiao Choi.
Of course, yeah.
Did he? So, was he had guys on for one of them, didn't he?
Nope.
Oh, all right. I got one. Hooray.
All 3. And I just noticed this in the... They don't have this for every game, but they... Baseball Reference added, like, some weather notes.
Ooh.
And there's a column for sky, and it says overcast. And that day.
Against the Twins, right?
Yep. And they won that game 4-3. What a weird thing.
I was at... That was the... Because he was on a tear that series, and I was not at that game, but I was at... I think it was the game after when he did hit... He had another home run, and it was really, really, really far. And if you can find a clip of it, and you see someone in the pavilion near the home run in a green, bright green shirt, that's me.
Ha! So, I think he hit 6 home runs in 3 games?
It's something like that, yeah.
Okay, so I am going to... Do you want the others, or do you want to guess some more?
I do not want to guess some more.
Okay, so the others, we'll go in chronological. Duke Snider, 1950.
Might have guessed that somewhere.
He had 4 hits that game. Corey Seager, 2016.
I knew there was a game that's the game, like, in the back of my head. I'm like, there's one really recent, and I just cannot think of it.
There's one recenter, which is a word, which I completely forgot about. Last September 6th, AJ Pollock against the Giants.
Three home runs. I am in a new reality. That game did not occur in my... This is like a Berenstain's Bears thing. You've tricked me.
It's Berenstain or Berenstain Ruiz. That's how... How are you going to pronounce it? So just okay, just to get the other trivia question out of the way. So can you name any of the four Dodgers that have multiple three home run games?
Nope.
What if I gave you a hint and said one of them has a four home run game in that group?
Gil Hodges.
It's Sean Green.
I had Sean Green backed up.
Yeah.
Could have let me say it.
I could have. The others are Adrian Gonzalez, mm-hmm. Corey Seager. Which I also forgot that he had two three home run games.
Okay, yeah. I'm 100% in a new reality than I was 2 days ago. All right.
And the other one's Duke Snider.
Okay.
So we mentioned the 2016 game for Seager. I'm just double-checking to see when the other one was because I forgot.
I think this thing that I'm learning is that these are sneakily more common than maybe
yeah.
I realize.
Well, and then – so I remember, like, the Juan Uribe one, and then, like, I almost forgot.
You know what I wonder? I wonder if we – because this is true of the Hisop Choi game. It's true of the Mookie Betts game. If they hit the three home runs – early, you remember it a lot because there's that anticipation that they might hit the fourth versus when it's like they're 2 for 4 and they get the bonus one kind of near the end. They're like, oh, it's a three home run game now. Okay, and you move on.
So Puig had one a couple years ago, and then I believe I can't remember. I think he followed it with a two home run game, or I don't think that the three home run was the second game, but I know he had 5 in 2 days. Justin Turner had one last year, which also what. Like I don't really remember that either, and I think that was also after like one of his patented like slow home run Aprils because it was May 7th. And then the other Corey Seager one was 2017, by the way. God,
I was looking up. I was surprised that Gil Hodges wasn't on that list, so I googled Gil Hodges three home run in game, and Google decided to interpret that as how many home runs did he have in game threes of World Series, apparently.
Whoa.
And the answer is zero. Again, that's Google figuring itself out, so that might not actually be accurate. So
I'm gonna ask you that at some point this year. And
who
then
holds the record for game three?
No, I'm just gonna ask you specifically Gil Hodges. Just to see if you remember it.
All right, you know what it's time for? I know what time it is. Do you? Are you aware?
I can't wait.
Okay.
I have an idea.
Okay.
With Jeans and Craig. We love them.
Question the first. Mookie Betts has scored 628 runs in his career, which makes him third behind Charlie Blackmon and Mike Trout in most runs scored since Betts' debut in 2014. If that had been your trivia question, I don't think I would have guessed Charlie Blackmon. I'm not surprised by it, but I wouldn't have guessed it, I think.
Same, yeah.
This stat update leads to my three-peat question, starting with a trivia question for Eric. There's two trivia questions for you. Craig's got my back. He's tired of me embarrassing myself.
Yeah.
All right, you ready? Except you get these right a lot of the time. So first of those, only three players have scored more than 800 runs in their L.A. Dodger careers. Can you name them? And I've got a hint if you need it.
So I have a rough idea. So Willie Davis is one. And I almost have to say Bill Russell because he played 18 years.
But you would have to be wrong.
Okay. And then I'm just trying to think of like... Yeah, this is a tough one. Like, so the infield was 8.5 years. Garvey had like the most counting stats like of that crew. He played till the end of 82, 9 years. I don't think he scored enough to get 800, but I'm probably wrong. And then in terms of like, why is this stumping me? And then if you look at Kemp, he wasn't here long enough. Gonna stick with, I'll just say Garvey.
852. Nope. Okay. I locked you in for you. You got it.
Okay, good. No, just kidding. and then, the other one, trying to figure out none of them. Let's see. I don't know if he played long enough, but Maury Wills?
Yep, there you go.
It is, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, all right.
Yeah.
I guess he had 130 that 1 year, so like that'll get you there.
The second question, to show you the difference in offenses, from 1947 to 1957, five Brooklyn Dodgers scored more than 800 runs. Can Eric name them? I'm going to give you a hint to go with. Two are not Hall of Fame players.
Okay, so you got to go Jackie and Duke Snider. They were full-timers.
Yep.
Jackie wasn't in 57, but he played enough.
Both correct. Duke 994, Jackie Robinson 947. That's a lot of runs.
That's a lot. Now I'm trying to think. Gil Hodges didn't make the Hall of Fame, but he played every day. Not the fastest, but I'm gonna name him.
916. My backup hint to you was name famous. Who's the yeah. most famous non Hall of Fame Dodger?
So I also have to say, even though he was a catcher, just given the length of this time, I'm gonna say Roy Campanella.
No.
Okay, he didn't make it. Dang. Okay, so...
Oh, a reminder, a Hall of Famer to name.
Yeah, you're right. That's sort of why I defaulted. I'm like, oh yeah, they had the... You mean the Hall of Famer who batted leadoff every game for that team? Okay, how about Pee Wee Reese?
There you go.
The two that... Oh, okay, so the other one that's not a Hall of Famer...
Yeah.
I would say Carl Furillo.
You got it. Well done.
Nice.
I would have gotten an embarrassing low number of those. I think I would have gotten the famous Brooklyn players. I wasn't going to get Carl for real, though. For both of us, not a trivia question, thank God. For both of you, do you think Betts has a chance to score over 800 runs in his Dodger career?
So, committed the cardinal sin when Matt Kemp signed his 8-year, $160 million contract to write a post basically outlining what he needed to do to break every Dodger record, mm-hmm. Career record, because that was obviously going to happen. That said, 12 years and a month is enough time to score 800 runs, even if he's not here that whole time. So I'm going to say, of course he has a chance, but I think it's more than likely, well, more than likely that he does. So, in fact, he's getting to 1,000.
Whoa, that's exciting. Yeah. Whew. Yeah. We've got more questions here, but I know we talked about it already. It is strange thinking Mookie Betts, this is the opposite of the Piazza feeling, right? We have a Hall of Famer who might go in as a Dodger despite. We only have the 20 or so games with him. It's this weird, huh? We acquired and extended for a very long time a really, really good player. Many Dodgers are great Dodgers, or either came from the far system or were the scrap heaps that resurrected into good players. So having this for more than a year or two it's been a weird feeling. It's exciting.
When you first said reverse Piazza, I was my scope for that was that worry that they're not going to be able to sign him as a free agent. And they traded Piazza because of that. But that was obviously lifted with the contract. So that's where I thought you were going with that. The where we're at right now of the, there's no, oh man, what if Betts leaves, you know, there's none of that. So I guess in two ways, he's the reverse Piazza.
Yeah. This is how Yankees fans feel all the time. All right, next question. It's for me. Jacob, I have to think your love of research and gear went into hyperdrive when it came to gear for you and your wives.
My wife.
New child. I was wondering what baby carrier you ended up with, though I know it may be too early for your child to use it. Note, I am not talking about a stroller, as that answer could probably take the entire podcast. Luckily, the New York Times' The Wire Cutter had infinite recommendations for all the baby gear, and I didn't have to fight. It only gets tough when they don't have a category that I'm looking for, because I tend to just kind of either, I don't necessarily always get their pick, but I trust their research and I make the pick rather easily, which was the case for the stroller. And I think it was the case for the sort of more heavy duty baby carrier, but we actually don't have it yet. It's still on the registry, which, and because of, like Craig said, we actually aren't planning on using it. We were planning on using the stroller. Craig on the ball here for most of those outgoings. And for home, we have, I forget the name brand because we do not have the name brand. But it's more of a baby wrap. It's a lawn, Ergo, I think is the name brand. I think mine is a Boba. I think that's right. It's basically a lawn piece of stretchy cloth that you wrap around you in a really weird way to hold the baby in. Mm-hmm. That works well for like when you're just carrying a baby around for chores and stuff. And we have used that. Eleanor is not the biggest fan of it, but
yeah.
If she's a crying mess, then that's what she gets. So, yeah, that's that. Lots of other baby gear. If any listeners needs advice, I think we liked almost everything we bought, but there's a few things we wouldn't buy again. Just we're not using it at all. So.
When you guys have your second, third, and fourth children, you can.
How do people have more than one kid?
It's crazy.
Like, yeah. Almost every parent, everyone older than me, I have very few only child friends. A few, for sure. But mm-hmm. I have so many more with larger families. I have no idea how they did that. I suppose, the ability to earn more buying power in a single job helped a lot. But. Yeah. That's not exclusively it. I have a lot of respect for my parents, any parent that actually did that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you were saying, sorry.
Oh, no. That was.
Oh, I'm ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's time for me to try this. Assuming Kybert Ruiz makes his start today, how'd I do?
It's fine. I was talking about this. The Dodgers sound Kybert. Like a. Pronunciation guide.
You got in my head now,
right? That's where I'm at. So, in February, they sent out a guide with like the proper like accent marks and some pronunciations for players, and for the Dodgers catcher, it says K-E-Y in all caps as the accented syllable, and then B-E-R-T.
Kybert.
So, but if it's Kybert, wouldn't you use an A? So. That's my confusion, because that to me reads as Kybert, and but pretty much what Dave Roberts has said when he's mentioned him is Kybert, which I think is right. So who knows?
We're gonna go with Kybert until someone tells us otherwise.
Yeah, and that's fine. And like we're recording this before the game Sunday, I'm sure Joe Davis and Alana and Oral Hershiser they'll be a little more clued in, and we'll talk to Kybert later this week, I think, to clear up one way or the other. So I'm sure it'll come out this week, but that's where we're at sort of right now. That's why I'm like in my head about it, which is
weird. You got in my head.
assuming part, he is starting today, so like that's a thing. Even though technically the game hasn't started yet,
So I'm gonna knock on wood and still say, assuming Kybert Ruiz makes his start today. He'd be the fourth of the top five Baseball America Dodger prospects playing on the 2020 Dodgers. And yet, with the halfway point of the season approaching, no real sign the Dodgers' number one prospect, Gavin Lux, will be playing for the for the Dodgers. Huh. For the bet trackers, simply, will Lux play this year for the Dodgers? And if so, whose playing time will get most affected by his call-up?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. I was going to go the opposite way.
So I think he's going to eat more into Kike's time.
We're in agreement for the second half. And mm-hmm. How he gets called up, I think, is if Kike continues to struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Question four. I've been pleasantly surprised on both how the broadcasters are doing when calling games via monitors and the crowd noise. outside of the occasional explicitive being picked up, maybe more than explicitive, and Joe Davis has been great on those, by field microphones. What are your thoughts about this aspect of 2020 baseball? Note, I don't particularly think we need either Take Me Out to the Ball Game or God Bless America in the seventh break right now.
Or the national anthem before the game if there's no fans, but whatever. That's another topic. But yeah, I sort of, it is weird. There's you could hear stuff, which is kind of cool, but then there are a lot of F-bombs and Walker Buehler started last. Yeah, then Joe Davis' reaction to him has been pretty great. It's like, he's just like, either that or like, sorry about that, folks. You know, or like, man, I forgot who it was last week. Was it the Mets? It was either Mets or Yankees, I think. And they were like, on the broadcast, they're like, oh no, the FCC is going to get us or something. I think that's what they said, like, as someone yelled. But like, that part's kind of weird. I think a lot of announcers, they're Joe Davis especially, and Oral Hershiser, like, I sometimes forget that they're not at the game. Like, the Dodgers are in Anaheim this weekend. They've been on the road previously, and the Dodgers, they call their games from the Dodger Stadium. Every team is calling it from home or, like, somewhere in the home city. They don't travel. So it's weird, but a lot of times you don't really notice, and like, that's a testament to how good a lot of these broadcasters are. But so that's been, I thought that would be more of a slip up in that regard, but I haven't noticed it yet. So like, that's good on them. But yeah, like, other than that, like, it's just one of those. I think it's the crowd noise thing. That's hard to get used to too. But like, other than that, like, it's been like a pleasant surprise of how like sort of seamless it's been.
Yeah, that'll be if we ever have a down week in news, a fun episode to do is the, maybe just save it for the off season, is like, what rule change, like, rate the rule changes, or just the atmosphere changes, and would you carry any of them over? Obviously, we're hoping fans actually make it back, but we'll do a nice mid-season review on all of those.
I like it.
Final question. For the meal service I regularly volunteer at in Hollywood, I've been able to try various sauces and marinades to use on a certain national fast food restaurant's breaded chicken that have been donated. So if given a choice, and this really is like, what is your favorite McNugget sauce question, though this chicken is not from McDonald's. Do you like teriyaki, traditional barbecue, Asian chili spice, buffalo wing style, or do you have another suggestion?
Now, I'm wondering, I don't know if this matters, is this... I mean, I guess he's thinking of it like as a McNugget, like an actual dipping thing,
mm-hmm.
Or is it more like, I guess the size of the chicken, it seems to matter in this case to me. I'm just trying to think of how it's prepared. Like,
I am assuming, yeah. If you're given a plate of a mix of smaller nugget size and strips, but they're all breaded. And then you're given a side of a sauce or two.
Oh, a side.
Okay, and then yourself.
It could be like tossed in the sauce or something like that.
Yeah, could do that yourself, but.
So my default on this is probably buffalo sauce, buffalo wing sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo sauce. That'd be a weird taste. Asian chili spice, always good as well. I'm not sure if it's the perfect thing by itself for this, but like I would probably default to buffalo wing, but like I don't know, I'll try just about anything on there, but yeah, I don't know. What about you?
This is a thing where back when I lived in LA, the answer would always be buffalo plus ranch. Gotta have both.
Oh, okay.
I can't do just buffalo. It's too just spice, too single note. But now that I live out here, I think it's an equal measure of that along with a good barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty solid, because again, it's one of those like that's going to be great no matter what. Like, so like you're okay. In terms of actual like buffalo wing sauce, Buffalo Wild Wings, I think my favorite buffalo wing sauce is their spicy garlic. It's not super hot, but it's hot enough. But it's really flavorful, and I've been like leaning toward that more in terms of that. I don't really eat at Buffalo Wild Wings that often.
I've never liked their wings. I actually don't mind like their burgers. I actually really like their fries. But their hot is not is just a hair too hot for me to eat a lot. Their sauce is also just like a little too syrupy in texture. They're not vinegary enough for me. Like they're not syrupy, but like they're not. I like mine very, very vinegary, very wet. So I
like of the national like chains, Wingstop I think has better wings.
I think Wingstop is a treasure.
Yeah,
I think for a national chain, they're just extremely high quality.
And I like their Atomic. I think that's their hottest one.
I believe
and
that's
it's,
correct.
And it's not like it's not. Burn your face off.
No, I still usually I get hot or Cajun from them most of the time.
Yeah, that's solid. So yeah, I'm on board with all that.
I want wings now.
Yeah, no, it's actually same here. We're gonna stop now and go order some wings. But thanks for listening, everybody. Good luck. You'll have already seen Keibert Ruiz, and you'll have a better idea of how to pronounce it than I do. You'll see his major league debut, but we'll talk about it next week, I'm sure. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you later.